MyResume.gov.
My resume
now includes changing lives.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday in the Studio. I'm Tom King and we are here with Merle Kelch, Kelch and Associates in Wausau, back from his travels. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning. You can tell I'm a little bit out of it because I was looking around for my headphones.
Yes, and they were on your head.
They're on my ears. You know, Tom, I was going through and there's a whole bunch of stuff coming up, and of course we see the stock market goes down and a lot of stuff bouncing around back and forth and whether or not the Fed is the tapering going to work or how it's going to have effect inside of the economy, and largely that along with Cisco and Walmart is the reason we see the markets drop this past week. But this morning, I'm sitting around and I'm thinking about, you know, the technology stuff is so cool because the technology is really what drives the marketplace. It's called the supply side type of economics. And I'm looking around this morning, and of course, we were talking about it on the air, folks, at the Blues Fest last night. Fantastic music, great crowd, a lot of fun as usual. And as I get home, no phone. Well, it must be in my pocket. So I go to bed. You know, this morning I'm looking around so I can send you a text this morning and say I'm actually on my way.
Yeah.
Can't find my phone.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, where's your phone? Because, of course, you know, in this day and age, folks, your phone is everything.
Right.
Now, I do have to admit, I'm saying this, and for security purposes and for the SEC, I do have my password on the phone.
Okay.
So, if, you know, 10 people do the password 10 times, it erases the phone. I'm thinking, oh, no, that's a lot of stuff. So I pop up my iPad, which says, where's my phone? And it tells me exactly where my phone is.
And it was?
So my friend John, it's in your truck. The back of your truck is my. And so for John's parents, who always listen, call John.
Out at Fern Island.
Well, I think that's a much better place. Yeah. And I don't see it driving around the city.
Yeah.
So I know John is still home. So John's parents, call John.
Okay.
Tell him my phone is in his truck.
All right. 715-845-2155. Then we'll call. I want to talk about that a little bit because earlier this week, you know, Apple's been struggling over the past, year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier this week, we had a couple of the two of the biggest investors, at least in the United States and maybe the world, say that they had bought in a big stake of Apple. Carl Icahn and George Soros both have increased their stake in Apple substantially. And then that, of course, made the price of Apple stock go up.
Mm-hmm.
How can the average investor take advantage when these big guys determine that a stock they like is undervalued and go into it heavy? Is there a way that the average investor can take advantage of a situation like
that?
Well,
certainly there is. But the thing that you have to do as an average investor is to look around and say, do I like that stock? You know, these guys are doing the same thing that you and I should be doing. The only difference is they're doing it.
George Soros suggested that the Apple stock is undervalued by $200 a share, that it could go as high or should be as high as $700 a share.
It might be. I don't know what economic models or models he's looking at as far as where the stock price could be. But, you know, things go underpriced, things go overpriced all the time. The difference is between the investor who's successful and the one who's not is the people who recognize that. So if you and I, Tom, can't recognize an individual stock when it goes down in price and goes up in price and to try to figure out where that best place is to be, we should be in mutual funds, which is one of the reasons that 401ks and those types of things exist.
Well, and of course, having the amount of money necessary to take advantage of it and buying a huge chunk of Apple stock at, you know, $500 a share or whatever.
Yeah, well, the beautiful part about those guys, they can throw $1 billion around like you and I throw around $100 or, well, maybe 50.
Now, the next question is regarding technology as well. When Carl Icahn bought the Apple stock, bought a big position in Apple, he tweeted about it the next day. And that, of course, as soon as he tweeted it, the price of the stock went way up. Talk about social media and how that's affecting investing the movement on stock prices and the whole legality of all that.
This is just nothing more than opinion and commentary from Merle Kelch. So here you have it, folks.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think that right now, for example, if I am a stockholder, large stockholder, a particular public company, or if I'm an officer of the company, if I want to sell stock or buy stock, if I'm considered an insider or a large portfolio, for example, I have to announce that I'm going to buy or sell. Okay, those are the rules. I have to fill out some forms. I got to let the Securities Exchange Commission know that I'm going to buy and sell.
Like I think Sheryl Sandberg from Facebook did last week. She she sold a big chunk of her Facebook stock because the price was way up, and she walked away with a lot of money. But she had to announce that ahead of time.
She had to announce it ahead of time. I think we're going to see the same thing happen with Facebook, Twitter, that type of stuff, because it's not fair to the person, as you said before, that can't afford to go out and buy a million shares of Apple and then tweet about it to your friends and let it go out into the media, and all of a sudden the share price goes up 10%. So because he sent out a tweet and spent the money, he'd get a 10% bump. I don't know if it's 10%. I'm using this as an example, by the way.
Does he have to wait a while before he sells that stock, or can he get that bump and then sell it immediately and take the profit?
Yes, no. You can, you know, if again, his rules might be a little bit different than yours and mine.
Right.
Typically, if you buy a stock and you sell the stock tomorrow, before you had a chance to actually pay for it, unless the money's inside of your account, for example, companies don't like that, and they'll usually freeze you and not let you buy anything for 30 days and they do that, because they don't like that type of thing. You know, there used to be a day, Tom, and here's the reason for it, is that it used to be a five-day settlement, which means I could buy a stock today, but I didn't have to pay for it for 5 days from now. So if I bought the stock today, I bought it at $10 a share and went up to $13 per share tomorrow, and I sold it, I just made $3 a share on something I never paid for. So the market didn't like that, so now they made it so it's trade plus three. So it comes down to so it's 3 days you have to pay for it. Or without really, even though it's trade plus three, the money has to be in the account before you bought it today, and that's before you buy it, and that's really the way the rules are working. But if you keep doing that without having to settle first, the companies don't like that sort of stuff. I mean, it's not the case. Now, Carl Icahn might be a different animal simply because he's so large in doing it, and he might be doing it through some of his own broker-dealers or own people, so he may not get that same rule, so he might be able to buy it and then sell it 2 days later at the 10% and not tick people off.
What would stop these big guys from doing this all the time now with social media?
That's my exact point. I think it's going to come to the point that rules are going to come out and say, well, you can't do that. If you are involved in the securities industry or if you're a insider or high person, you can't tweet about what you're doing with an individual stock. That would be the same thing as, you know, the president of Midwest Communications using the radio to say, well, yesterday I bought 500 shares in this new radio company. And I think it's going to be fantastic. I really love
it. Watch the price of the stock go way up and then sell it the next day.
And then sell it the next day. So yeah. Using the media of some sort to help his own case. Now, that sort of stuff has been around a long time. But I think we see some regulation coming in that. And as much as I'm against regulation, that may not be a bad area, especially if we see it continually abused. And I actually heard about that yesterday. I didn't read about it. I just heard about it on the news. They were talking about it on CNBC a little bit.
Well, it's the situation now. Everything moves a lot faster. We might have found out that Carl Icahn had taken a big position in Apple, but not immediately, and not seeing a bump in stock within hours, if not, you know, one day.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you usually see the stock go up and down anyway when big blocks of go in, but you usually don't have the people with the big blocks calling up and saying, hey, I bought a big block.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Ed.
Ed, go ahead. You're on with Merle.
Morning, Ed.
That would kind of be like Blue Horseshoe loves Endicott Steel, right?
Well, you know what? They even completely skip the Blue Horseshoe and the Endicott Steel because they're just settling it themselves, you know. So I love the analogy. Thanks, Ed.
All right. Thanks for the call, Ed. Appreciate it. Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you what. Let's take a break here, but the phone lines are open. If you have a question for Merle regarding anything involving your portfolio, retirement accounts, whatever the case may be, this would be the time to get an answer. Give us a call here this morning. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Shaquille O'Neal for new Icy Hot Advanced Cream.
I know all about living with pain. After 19 years of pro ball, man. But now I'm feeling awesome. New Icy Hot Advanced Relief is the real deal.
Icy Hot Advanced Cream has two maximum strength ingredients to last up to 50% longer. Works great on shoulders, backs, knees, even arthritis. Icy to dull the pain and hot to relax it away.
Come on now, advance past pain and get on with living.
New Icy Hot Advanced, available in cream and patch.
Pain over.
Use only as directed.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Nana used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well.
Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below. Or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits weren't the only thing on the rise. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take your world for granted. Most days go by without a whole lot of surprises. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if everything familiar becomes anything but? Would you be prepared? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message...
Today's biggest newsmakers and your calls. WSAU Feedback.
Well, I want to talk about the Trayvon Martin thing, man, but not in the way that you think I want to.
All right.
Periodically, you have to educate people because that's your job, and I feel like when Tom can't properly educate you, I have to. Since he doesn't. It's not the message. It's the messenger, man. I guarantee you. People that I know, Seth, will talk to you quicker than they would a Rush or they would a Sean.
Feedback at 8 on WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. Phone lines are open, 715-845-2155. If you have a retirement question, if you have a question about your money, what to do with your money, where's the best place to put your money at this point in time? We're going to talk a little bit here about Social Security and when's the best time to start drawing on Social Security. There's a good article on MarketWatch this morning. What did you think about that article? And
I like the article, and it's a couple of good things to know. You know, by the way, I just love the entrance and exit music. I say this all the time. Oh, it's beautiful. You know, it's amazing to me because I know that I'm officially getting old. Because the music that I used to listen to when I was in high school is now the entrance and exit music. My goodness.
The music of our day.
And I know how long it's been since I was in high school. I just went to the 30th reunion, so we've been there. So this was it.
All right.
All right, here we go. So Social Security, the question always is, do I start drawing at 62, or do I wait until 66, or 68, or 70, or when do I start drawing on Social Security? And there's really no right or wrong answer for this, folks. It's entirely what you want to do. But there's an article that's out here. So anybody who's taking a look at this coming up, I want you to go to MarketWatch.com and take a look at this. It's called Delay Social Security for More Income by Henry Hebler. Now, though I don't agree with everything on the inside of here, largely it's pretty good. He gives some pretty good examples here. Now, here's the real thing. You know, if we take a look at this, the old rules were, and we've used it before, is that if you start drawing at 66, for example, let's go to the old rules. I remember when everybody had Social Security and started at age 65, and 65 was your full Social Security, now called normal retirement age, stands for NRA, which I think is kind of funny given Charles Heston and all this stuff. But your normal retirement age, NRA, used to be age 65, and now it is probably 66 in 3 months or 2 months or 8 months, depending upon when your birthday is. Tom and I are so young, our Social Security is now never. That was an attempt at humor. All right, there we go. So with Social Security, then, we look at it and say, well, okay, if I'm not going to take it at age 65, but I want to take it at age 62, I'm going to receive a discount. Well, the discount in that used to be that at age 62, you received 80% of your Social Security benefit at 62, and you take the amount of money you would receive between 62 to 65, and you divide that by the amount of money that your increase was, and it told you how many months that the advantage was to you versus the advantage to the government. So, and that being the case, it always turned out to be about 144 months or 12 years, meaning that if you died within 12 years, you got more money than the government had. But after 12 years, the government is ahead of the game because now your discount, of course, is going to affect you. When we go look at those numbers today, it's really not much different, Tom, saying that If we take a look at the amount of money that we'd receive inside of a raise or a discount by taking it at age 62 or a raise and waiting, that we'd still have to wait some 11 years, 11 and a half years tends to be the average if we go through and do the math. So if you look at it from age 65, let's do 65. And we look at this and say, well, between age 65 and age 77, Tom, do you plan on going to meet your maker during those years? Well, we don't know. Given your lifestyle, I think the odds are high. Just to let
now,
you know.
Wait a minute now.
And
I'm going to live to be 120. What do you mean?
So if you're going to live to be 120, then you might want
to
wait.
I'm going to afford to live to be 120. That's another question.
All I have to say is practice this. Paper or plastic, sir? Just that's
yeah.
Okay. So in here, it really kind of comes down to that math. You know, if we take a look at the numbers that we're sitting here, based upon a $1,000 benefit at age 66, so at your normal retirement age, your full retirement age is what they're calling it here. At age 62, we'd receive 75% of that, or $750. But if we wait until age 70, we'd receive $1,300 per month. And so they go inside of here and they create some tables and say, how much cash would you need to offset that to wait in that whole bit? But if we're planning on working between 62 to 65, which a lot of people do, obviously don't take your Social Security. Because during that period of time, you can only make a certain amount of money. It's about $14,000 or so. And then afterwards, you start losing Social Security for every hour that you work. So if you plan on working for a bit, between 62 and 65, obviously don't take the Social Security. Let those numbers continue to build and become higher. Some people still continue to keep working. For example, my mom, who still works in my office. Love you, Mom. We do give her a hard time and say we're not really sure why she's there, but she keeps getting paychecks. That's not true.
Uh-huh.
Mom works quite a bit in the office for us. But she used to, of course, when Dad passed away, she started collecting on Dad's Social Security. But over the years, she still continued to work and work for me in the office and that type of stuff, and now she collects on hers because hers became higher than Dad's. So as the years have gone on, she's just, you know, now waited, and she collects on her own Social Security. With that, we have to make sure that we keep track of what's going on with Social Security and find out what's best for you. Some people say, well, I've had it. I'm not going to work anymore. I'm retiring at 62. Other people say, well, I'm going to retire when I feel like it. I'm 62. I can collect any time. I'm going to wait until later on. So it's entirely what you want to do, folks. But remember, if you start collecting at 62 versus 65, the advantage is of the Social Security Administration if you live past about age 77 or so. Before age 77, the advantage is to you, in most cases, that you'll end up with more money in your hand collecting earlier than collecting later. But a great article, some great points. I recommend it highly to take a look at it if you're asking that question of yourself, should I collect it, should I not? Again, by Henry Hibbler, Delay Social Security for More Income in MarketWatch.com.
All right, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break for some news. We're going to come back. There's some questions here, a little interesting column talking about what folks should look for in a financial planner or a money manager, whatever title we want to give it. And I thought maybe we could talk about that a little bit. We'll do that when we'll come back. Phone lines are open, though. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Apartment hunting and having this debate with a landlord.
Like I said, no pets. Just can't rent you the unit.
Yeah, he's a dog, but sir, he's not a pet.
He's four-legged, he's hairy, he's on a leash, that's a pet.
No, Henry is an assistance animal. Look, I'm legally blind. Couldn't you make a reasonable accommodation for my guide dog?
Young lady, you can call your canine friend anything you want. Those are the rules.
Rules? Rules that allow for housing discrimination? So I made a call to HUD to confirm that, indeed, landlords must make reasonable accommodations for assistance animals. And now we're so happy in our new apartment.
If you think you've been discriminated against because of your disability, race, color, religion, national origin, sex, or familial status, call the HUD hotline, 1-800-669-9777, or go to hud.gov/fairhousing. File a complaint. Make something happen.
Fair housing is your right. Use it.
A public service message from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that. Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. Authorities in Egypt are still battling protesters. A standoff is underway between security forces and hundreds of people inside a mosque in Cairo. Earlier, the military rounded up more than 1,000 Islamists as the Muslim Brotherhood leadership remains defiant. A Wausau woman is in jail after being charged with theft from a business setting after allegedly taking about $200,000 from a 95-year-old woman. Investigators say 46-year-old Lori Gage took the money from the investment accounts of her elderly neighbor. Investigators say the victim may have also adopted Gage within the last 5 years. During Friday's court appearance, investigators claimed Gates used $80,000 to post bond for suspects in a drug-dealing case and questioned Gates' other handling of the victim's money. Judge Jill Falstead set a $400,000 cash bond. Gates remains jailed in the Marathon County Jail. And about 50 dead animals were found in a Shawano area home. Police were called by a contractor that was sent to change locks on the home that's being foreclosed on by the bank. Police found about 50 dead animals in the home, which smelled of feces, urine, and dead carcasses. They were able to rescue about a dozen animals that were still alive, including a 12-foot python. Neighbors told investigators they haven't seen the man who lives there in about a week. The Brewers beat the Reds 7-6. Jonathan Lucroy with a walk-off two-run homer in the ninth inning. The two teams play again tonight. You can hear that game on our sister station, Fox Sports AM 1390 and FM 93.9. That's because Packer football will be right here on WSAU. The Packers and the Rams in preseason action from St. Louis. Pregame show at 5 o'clock. The weather today, a good deal of sunshine and a bit warmer with a high of 82. Tonight, clear skies, low 57. Tomorrow, sunshine mixed with a few clouds, continued warm, high 83. Monday, partly cloudy, warm and a bit humid with a high around 85. That's a look at news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News Station, WSAU.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
We're here today to ask people about marriage.
For starters, what's the best thing about being married?
Who I get to stay married to.
Togetherness.
To me, is having a companion.
My favorite thing about being married is that I have a partner.
Do you think your marriage is good for more than just the two of you?
Influence those around us.
Yeah, I think.
In a positive way?
I think so.
I would hope that people would see that when we're together that we really have a very true affection for each other.
What everybody wants, and we know we're lucky to have it.
The energy we give out in our home, I think, spreads out to other people.
Your marriage just continues to go on and on and on.
Oh, sure, and affect generations after us.
I think it really sort of stabilizes your whole community. It's the cornerstone of a society, right?
Sounds like a good marriage goes a long way.
It touches a lot of people.
Want to improve your marriage? For ideas, go to foryourmarriage.org. A message from the Catholic Church.
No matter if you live on the north side, south side, east, or west side.
You know what's going on around where I live.
Just stories that matter and are interesting.
We have the stories that all sides are talking about.
I want to wake up where you are.
Waking up where you are.
Local news matters.
That matters to me.
Wake up. The WSAU Wisconsin Morning News on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. Phone lines are open, 715-845-2155 if you have a question for Merle. Ran into a little Q&A column on MarketWatch asking questions about how to choose financial advisor. Mm-hmm. So we could maybe dig into that a little bit.
Sure.
Folks maybe are confused when they hear, you know, a lot of different places about people that want to manage their money. The first question was, What is the difference between a financial advisor, a financial planner, and a wealth manager? Because we've heard those all of those terms used.
Sure, sure.
What in your opinion, what's the difference?
I'd like to go by how do you choose a financial advisor? I'd go by weight. I think
your client list would be very big then, wouldn't it?
Oh, Jesus, terrible. Just I'm replacing the refrigerator in my house because it's shrinking my clothes. Thank you. Tip your waitress on the way out. Very good. That's nice. You know, there really, unfortunately, is not that much of a difference between somebody who calls themselves a financial advisor, financial planner, or wealth manager. Wealth manager is a term that's been popping up as of recently, but financial advisor, financial planner have been used interchangeably, or investment advisor have been used interchangeably for years. FINRA has tried to come out, as well as broker dealers, and said, well, if you call yourself a financial planner is something different than a financial advisor or an investment advisor, so therefore you have to do different things if you're going to call yourself a financial planner.
Now, FINRA is the organization that
Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. It's the SRO, or self-regulatory organization from the Securities Exchange Commission. So how that works out in America is that in America, the Securities Exchange Commission says, okay, all of you all of you securities, stock trading, bond trading kind of folk that are out there, you have to have a standardized licensing to make sure we all know what's going on and that type of thing. And to do that, we're going to create this organization that you're going to self-run, and that organization then is going to create the licensing and how it works. And so that is FINRA. It used to be called the NASD, National Association of Securities Dealers, now called FINRA. So it is not a governmental organization, though sometimes I think they believe they are a governmental organization. But it's actually run by people in the industry. So, for example, if I really had the desire to, I could become the president of FINRA and run it, which I think makes it somewhat tougher because now you have the people who are in the industry creating the tests, so you can't have some person who's never been in the industry asking those types of questions.
Now, can the argument be made, and I know this is a tough question for you, but can the argument be made that self-regulation in this type of industry is not the way to go because they aren't tough enough on the people that break the rules?
You know, being in this industry, I have to say about this one, no. I think it's tougher than if the government did it themselves. For example, it was actually people who were part of FINRA who were ratting on Bernie Madoff, and the SEC didn't do anything about it. And Bernie Madoff was a president of FINRA at one particular point in time, and people in FINRA were saying, you know, this can't work. This isn't the case. I think there's a lot of pride, and I'm just going to simply say this because I'm part of it. I think there's a lot of pride inside of FINRA and the people are there that they try to do their best to make sure everything is as much above board as you possibly can get. The amount of paperwork that's come out now to make sure that things are going in the right direction is just phenomenal. You know, for example, Tom, when I first started out in this business, all the information we needed for a client was on a half a sheet of paper. That included their name, address, and whether they're aggressive, conservative, and on the back it left room for all of their investments. And today now we have, you know, scanners and hundreds of pages of paper for our clients. It's absolutely crazy. So back to the question then, what's the difference between a financial advisor, a financial planner, a wealth manager, investment advisor? You might as well throw that one out there. And the answer is really nothing. There's nothing that's really regulatory from a regulatory standpoint that does anything differently. If you call yourself a financial advisor, you're going to be making recommendations, as the term would say, about investments and how to go in which type of a direction. If you're a financial planner, typically then you're helping a person plan towards something. An investment advisor, same thing, planning your investments. Wealth manager, that's a new term for me. But if we take all those terms together, we're really doing the same type of a thing. The goal in this industry would be to take somebody that you've just met, of course, and they have a goal of retirement in most cases, but you have to look beyond retirement. And then our goal in this industry would be to get them there, not only to retirement, but work beyond and start looking at all the other disciplines to make sure that this person is well-rounded, not only from a retirement and from an investment standpoint, but as well as estates, trusts, attorneys, accountants, and make sure all that stuff and taxes are all in play. That's what we do in our offices, and I can tell you that colleagues of mine that are in the city that I know that do a good job do the same thing for their clients. If you're looking for somebody just to buy or sell an individual stock, well, you can certainly do that too. But it's the people who are, you know, financial advisor, financial planner, wealth manager. It's the person who sits down and says, okay, where do you want to finish in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years? And what best do we need to do to get you there? And what disciplines do we need to make sure we're putting in place to get there? That's your financial advisor, your financial planner, your investment advisor. And unfortunately, there's no regulations to say what one of those titles does versus the other. But I think they all work interchangeably.
I guess the next question would be, if, when folks trying to decide who they have manage their money, is how the person is compensated. And when you're talking about fee-only, fee-based, fee and commission, all these different types of ways, I guess, talk about, in your opinion, what are the best, what are the ones to stay away from, things like that.
You know, it's interesting because the FINRA is pushing the industry in one direction, and the industry, in my opinion, opinion, shouldn't go there. Now, let me back up in saying so. California, a number of years ago, probably 10 or so now, said that if you call yourself fee-only, you have to drop all of your securities license, all of your insurance license, because you're going to be fee-only. So with that, throughout the course of the state of California, the year in which they did so, and I want to say it was 1999 or 2000, somewhere right in there, Tom. So when it happened, only less than 2% of the population of financial advisors or fee-only financial advisors, I should say those terms, actually did that. Well, that would lend it to be to me that a fee-only investment advisor, financial planner, is probably still getting commissions too if they're calling them that. It's such a small percentage of the largest state in the union, in regards to bodies at least, you know, didn't do it. They didn't drop it off. They didn't get rid of the securities license. They didn't drop their insurance license, et cetera, et cetera. So it's such a small percentage of it. You know, fee-onlys is they're probably going to charge an hourly rate to do some work. And there's some people who do that. I know there's a few people here in town that do a fine job doing that type of work. Two questions always pop into my mind. If you wouldn't trust the person to handle your investments where you just want to pay them an hourly rate, why would you trust them to make recommendations anyway? Just my thought on that. Now, going through, here's what FINRA and the Securities Exchange Commission are pushing, really much more through the SEC. They're really pushing, Tom, so that it's a percentage of assets for the fee, and that's it. Trying to take commissions out of the bunch. So in that, Tom, let's say that you have your $500,000, and I know I'm just cutting that in half for radio for you. He's not listening.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was looking at something online. Okay.
No, let's say you have your $500,000.
Yeah.
And you have your 1% fee, which is the direction that the market that you know FINRA's trying to go. So that's going to be about, you know, call it $5,000 a year to manage that account. So our industry, people like me, would receive $5,000 a year to manage that $500,000. Well, some people say, well, that's fantastic. So if I make a lot more money, the fee is a lot higher. That's a great idea. Yeah, well, the difference is that if your $500,000 goes down to $400,000, we get $4,000, we get less, but the compensation still comes there. Some people say, well, that's not very fair. Why is that? Well, the rules are, or the reason for that is that way back when, back in the 30s, people said, well, if you're going to have a fee or charge a fee or a percentage of assets and when the market goes up to receive money, if you are getting a fee for that account going up, somebody might be inclined to put you into things that are riskier than you should be so that that account goes up faster and you collect more of a fee. So, therefore, there's no fee arrangements that say I make money if you do unless it's a true bona fide type of a hedge fund. So the industry is pointing towards that 1% fee. Now, here's the problem that I personally have with this and wrestle with from a broker-dealer standpoint, or not from a broker-dealer standpoint, but from a FINRA standpoint, is that if, folks, you have a $500,000 account and you're not an active investor, meaning that you really don't do a lot of changing left and right. You don't do much, but you just have a basic portfolio. You take a few $1,000s a year out for income. Why would you pay $5,000 a year for something that's really going to be pretty minimal to maintain and do the work with? You know what? If all of our clients paid 1% fee, I would be a really, really happy guy, you know, because it means I really wouldn't have to work so hard and I wouldn't have to do radio, and you know, I'd be sitting around on my boat someplace fishing, you know. So, but it's not the right way to do it. And think, look at it this way, you know, for a lot of clients, many of them, they say, well, we just want to put the portfolio together. If we got a monitor, we got a groomer, we got to change a couple things here and there, we'll go ahead and do that. But at large, you have a lot of people who are just going to put the portfolio and not do much. Change things if they need to, maybe once or twice every 3 or 4 years. And so with that, having a commission type of a product where a person is going to pay a commission of, you know, 3% to 5% on average, if they're going to pay that commission one time up front, that's going to be cheaper than if they're paying 1% per year over 5 or 7 or 10 years, especially on a portfolio in theory that is growing. So I have a problem with the industry pushing that everybody pays 1% in the sense that some people it just doesn't apply to and it shouldn't apply to. For the person who's got, you know, $40,000 or $50,000, they're going to put it there and they're going to let it leave it sit there for 15 years till they retire. They don't need to have a 1% fee if they're just going to be in some good quality basic investments and there's not going to be a lot of activity to it. And so the industry's pushing in that direction. And so the fee only becomes is it an hourly fee? Which that, in my opinion, is the old term of the fee only. In my opinion, at least, the term fee-based means that it's going to be a percentage of assets as far as stuff goes, or some combination thereof. Today, most of the investment advisors, financial advisors, are probably going to be some combination thereof. You know, even in our office, we have some fee-based types of investments. Certain types of clients, you're not going to end up having commissions because of the type of an account, so it's going to end up becoming fee-based. Also, we have commissions that come into the office. Again, it depends upon what a client wants to do, and that's, in my opinion, how it should be explained if you're going to talk to a financial advisor. Okay, how do you get paid for what I want to do is a better question than simply saying, how do I get paid? When we have clients that say, well, Merle, how do you get paid? I just simply tell them a lot. But it's based upon what you want to do.
Right,
you know.
Sure.
So, for example, you know, Tom, your investments are going to be completely different than if we have, you know, president of XYZ company.
Right.
The investments might be completely different. Though the thing you want to have happen might be the same, but there are going to be different types of investments in both cases because of the size and character and scope and experience and that type of thing. So probably a really good question in there as I'm saying this is that how do you get paid asking a financial advisor doing stuff that I need to have done, I guess would be the best question in there.
All right, 715-845-2155, the number to call. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more. Phone lines are open. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Green Hunt. If you can have a bright white smile in 5 minutes, would I get your attention? Power Swabs is clinically proven to whiten your teeth in 5 minutes. Power Swabs whitens teeth on average 2 shades in 5 minutes and 6 shades in 7 days. To try Power Swabs risk-free, dial 1-800-663-5670. I guarantee your friends will love your movie star white smile. Try it risk-free, 1-800-663-5670. That's 1-800-663-5670.
What if you got rewarded for every good decision? What if your heart had a special way of letting you know it appreciates your healthy choices?
Oh, I've got to get my family to eat more vegetables.
Amazing!
And instead of cooking with butter tonight, I think I'll saute our veggies with a heart-healthy oil.
You're a genius!
So really, would your food choices pay off in heart health? Did you know that when you replace bad fats with healthier fats, like those in canola or other vegetable oils, it can lower bad cholesterol levels? And that's good for your heart. Here's a winning idea. Take up the challenge for good health, because the you of the future will say,
fantastic!
Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info proudly supports the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Today might be the day I drop out of school. Today could be the last day I try. My parents alone can't stop me. My friends can't even stop me. But you might be able to.
With United Way, you could tutor me, be my mentor, or volunteer to just read with me. If someone had helped me earlier, I might not be struggling. And studies prove that kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. There are tons of ways people like you can help kids like me stay in school. And United Way is calling for you to be one of them. Because it takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between me becoming one or the other could be you. Make me a success, not a statistic.
Take the pledge to volunteer now at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
training camp used to be where coaches forged teams of gladiators through two-a-days.
Let's go!
Where men became men.
I want to see snot bubbles in his nose when you put your helmet in his chest.
Things have changed.
After you guys finish your walkthrough, we'll all have some ice cream.
Saturday night, Packers preseason football against the Rams. Game night coverage at 5 on AM 550, FM 99.9, and WSAU.com.
And we're back here on WSAU. I'm Tom King with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau.
Folks, the opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. This show contains forward-looking statements which may not come true. Securities Investment Advisory Services offered through HBAC Incorporated. Member FINRA SIPC, HBAC Incorporated and Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies, and folks, this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only.
All right, well, we talked a little bit about how to choose a financial advisor, how a financial advisor should be compensated. What about all of the acronyms and letters after some financial advisors' names? What do they all mean, and what should folks look for?
Yeah, it was kind of funny. For a long time, I'd have my business card, and I put after my name BUM. I just thought people just put names up there. It wouldn't matter, and I thought that'd be a funny one.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, compliance doesn't think that's as funny as me.
Right.
So past broker-dealers said, you can't put that on there. I said, why? It's hilarious. There's so many names here. Nobody knows the difference anyway.
Yeah.
You know, in this industry, folks, you know, the CFP came out, and CFP would be mad at me if they said this, but they first started out, everybody thought they were a joke. CFP is not a college.
Certified financial planner,
correct. It started out literally as a mail order educational thing, and enough people got there to give you designation of CFP. Well, CFP is not the same thing as if you have a Juris Doctorate, like a lawyer, JD after it. It's not the same. It's not the same thing as if you have a MBA or a master's, you know, after your name. It's just not the same. College for Financial Planning has evolved into something I think is tremendous, and I give them all the accolades that they have. But what if didn't start out that way? Essentially, you said, well, if you pass this test and you send us $300, you can put CFP, that's your certified financial planner, after your name. And literally, when we started out this industry, well, why the heck are we sending them money to do that? You know, it didn't make any sense. But I have to say that as the years have gone along, I applaud those that have gone through the training and the class, it's probably like a master's degree in finance. It's a heck of a program. It's really turned out pretty good. Now, it still doesn't say much as far as a person's experience or education yet, but at least they've gone through the CFP course, and so they got that background behind them, and I applaud that. So if you see CFP behind your name, that's fantastic. But would I look for somebody that's CFP only? Not at all. You know, when you look at this industry, one of the bad things, in my opinion, about this industry is anybody can get the license if you pass the testing. So the testing for the securities exams, don't get me wrong, it's grueling. It truly is if you're going to take your Series 7. It's a bear of a test. It takes 6 hours for the test. You have to take a break, and it's a six-hour math test, okay? Except for the parts where they say, here's if you screw up, we're going to put handcuffs on you and haul you out of the office. You know, it's a grueling test. And so anybody who passes that test by no means is a buffoon or, the elevator not going all the way to the top. Well, maybe some cases. But it doesn't say, again, about the education and the background. So you could have somebody, I'm not picking on my psychology major friends, but you could have a psychology major now getting into the investment business and passing a securities license. But in my opinion, they've missed something in the middle of there being a psychology major as far as, you know, basic financial elements. And that's just my opinion. Will they learn it over the years? Most certainly. Will they learn it if they go through and do the CFP stuff? Sure. But would I start out with a person who just got their license and were a psychology major? Would I want to invest with them? Heck no, because I think they're missing some parts. But, again, that's my opinion. Now, I also come from this, folks, as, you know, going to school for finance and accounting and financial planning. You know, so I went to college for this. But in doing so, I would look for what the education and experience that a person has first and then worry about the designations later on. Does that help or make sense?
How do you ask those questions? What are the questions you should ask?
Yeah, how did you come here? I mean, what did you go to school for? I think what did you go to school for is just a direct great question. You know, what did you go to school for? Well, I didn't. Okay. Well, how do you come to this? How do you get? You know, what do you do for experience and education along the way? I think those are some of the best questions. Also, you know, look around. If you go to the office and you know, there's a the tricycle in a corner, and you know, the office is in a basement of their house, or you know, one of these sort of stuff. I wouldn't do those sort of things, okay? Because you want to have somebody who's not only professional but has been around for long enough that they have an office, and there's a staff back there, and there's somebody who can answer questions for you along the way, you know. Now I say that, and I'm kind of laughing at myself as I'm saying it, because at my office, if you call in, sometimes my mommy's going to answer. But
well, she's keeping you in line. People can look at it that way.
Folks, if you only knew what it's like working with your mom. Uh-huh. I love my mom a great deal, but my mom thinks if I'm not working hard enough, she starts booking up my calendar like you wouldn't believe, and just fills it up. She goes, you've been sitting around too much.
Yeah, she's not going to let you sit around and play video games on your computer.
No. You've been screwing around too much. You've golfed today, so you got to do this. So mom's on you. So never have your mom work for you, by the way. But in that, you know, look around for the professionals, because that's what you want to have. You know, professionalism comes around by that. So I would look for those types of things.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time for today. Anything else on your docket over there that you wanted to touch on in the next couple of minutes?
I've got a whole bunch of stuff. But it all really kind of comes down to what's happening inside of the news. Of course, we see that the job numbers are coming out okay. They're not really spiking and going any further.
Housing starts way up. I saw this
housing
week.
Starts have been nice. People are saying they would like to see the single families be up a little bit more. But given where the numbers are, near 900,000 for housing starts, single families are growing and growing nicely. But the difficult part is for first-time home buyers, the credit is still pretty tight out there yet. But you know what? I'm okay with that. You know, we can all buy a house. We just have to have enough credit, enough down payment. Makes sense. It's not an entitlement program, in my opinion. So with it, we look at that. And the big things to watch over the course of the next couple of weeks is Ben Bernanke talking about the tapering. Tapering means how much less of the bonds are going to buy, the mortgage bonds that they're going to buy coming out of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae.
It's interesting. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, I saw this week that they're actually, instead of the bailout that happened to save them, they're actually paying millions and millions to the government. They're actually creating money that the government is getting now. That they're back to becoming an asset instead of a debit.
That's
a good thing, isn't it?
It's a fantastic thing. And how it was designed to be, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, so with that, the bonds and the reissuing, you fix the credit quality of who they're, you know, you fix your credit quality coming in, you the problems disappear largely. You have to get rid of the problem that's within the system. But largely, as that stuff finishes up and you've improved the credit quality coming in, it improves everything, and, of course, money gets made. So it's working out nice.
You talk about Ben Bernanke. Larry Summers, with all the baggage he comes with, should he be the next Fed chief, or should it be the woman? And I can't, her name escapes me at this point in time. But
I think it should be her, in my opinion. I like that idea better.
Larry Summers, smart guy, but he has a lot of baggage, a lot of political baggage, mm-hmm. and a lot of stuff that
I'd rather not have that in there. I'd rather have somebody who can wake up and say, I don't have any favors I have to cash in. So the tapering effect is what's going to happen. You know, right now we're buying about $85 billion a month. Are they going to taper off and do 10? Are they going to do 30? Are they going to do 50? And that's all the numbers that are popping up. So with that being the case, we're seeing an expansion or an increase of interest rates coming up. And the increase of interest rates, almost 0.25% on the 10-year over the course of this past week, and one of the things that led to the marketplace bounce around a little bit this week. So those are the things to watch for in the next few weeks.
All right. Well, if folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
We will be in lovely Wausau. We are here, 3rd Avenue and Bridge Street. Stop on in for a cup of coffee. Try to catch us or give us a call at 715-849-3600, toll-free outside of the Wausau area at 866-355-5100, or find us online at KelchandAssociates.com.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, bro.
Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates. We've got the news coming up. The Polka shows are on the way. Packer football tonight. The Packers and Rams pregame show at 5 o'clock. That means Brewer baseball moves to our sister station, Fox Sports, AM 1390 and FM 93.9. The Brewers and the Reds pregame show at 6:10 over there. Right here on WSAU, Packers, 5 o'clock.